Part 050. Audrey arrived on time and full of bubbly enthusiasm and was fed some of the dinner we'd had. Angela had carefully kept it warm but covered and well moistened. The rest of us had sandwiches and a cup of tea. Audrey was a little over 3 years younger than Jack and had joined or else been called up for the ATS. I hoped to get to know her a little over the short time we'd have together. We walked to a local church for a special Christmas Eve evensong with carols. I hadn't been to church often. Before we went, Angela said, "Oh, Mary, I've been so rude. We didn't ask if you'd like to come. We just assumed. And then I remembered Jack saying you'd been brought up by some nuns, which probably means you're Roman Catholic, and won't want to come to a Church of England service." "I'd love to come. I don't know if I was or am actually Catholic, but the nuns treated me and the other girl as if we were, but they weren't oppressive about it. After I left the nuns' house, I mostly stopped going to church, but more because I don't find I've any particular religious affiliation. One of the things I love about the farm is being part of the growing world. I feel that's what a church should be like, full of life and growth. I hope I'm not rambling on too much. I've been to church at St. James in Taunton with the Gaffneys who own the farm, though they aren't very regular. But I do like the Christmas music, so I'm sure I'll enjoy the evensong. We'd all be a lot better off if people would think that way," Cedric said. Part 051. The evensong with carols was delightful. I felt happy. Jack was beside me, and I liked his family, as far as I knew them. They seemed to be very much themselves, with no special facade for me that I could sense. There was interest in who I was, the things I liked or didn't, but I hadn't been interrogated about my history. There was attention but not probing. After the service, we returned to the shop and had tea and some Cornish pasties followed by some date bread. Cedric explained in early 1939 I had a chance to get a fairly large order of pitted cooking dates. They're not fancy, but do nicely in pastries, or even in a few savory dishes we've tried after a fellow I met down the pub told me that in North Africa they put them in stews that are like curries. They serve the stew with some sort of cooked wheat that sounds like kuku, but I know that isn't what it really is called. I found a couple of good metal trunks that'll keep vermin out and I've got them in the storeroom. We let our regulars have a block from time to time. Since they're pre-rationing, we're not constrained in how we dispose of them, but we think it best to let them out bit by bit, making sure we've some ourselves, since they're a nice source of a bit of sweetness. Part 052. I woke to light coming in the window. I looked at my watch and saw it was after 8 o'clock. I'd had a very good sleep, but I needed the lavatory, so got up. Mabel had lent me a dressing gown. I should see if I can find one for myself. I was also still wearing the pajamas that had been Peter's before modification to fit me. After I'd been to the lavatory, I went in the bathroom and had a wash in the sink, where there was warm water on tap. At the farm we didn't have that luxury, and had to wash at the kitchen sink, getting water in a jug from a tap on the side of the range. If, of course, the fire was lit. I wonder who got up early this Christmas morning to light the fire. Or perhaps they banked it up last night to keep it going, but coal had been rationed since last July, so probably not. Angela had put a towel and flannel for me on the chair in Jack's room. I'd brought my own, but I'd leave them in the rucksack. I was careful to avoid wasting any hot water, but still luxuriated in being able to wash without wincing from the cold when the flannel touched my skin. I dressed in my blouse and skirt, and put on a pair of stockings. My pullover would be needed, even though the forecast was for a mild winter day, and I pulled it on, then combed my hair. There was a modest mirror hanging on the wall to aid me. I put on my shoes and went downstairs, where I found everyone but Audrey at the table drinking tea. After greetings, Angela asked any sign of Audrey yet. I didn't see her, nor hear anything from her room. I'll go up and wake her. Cedric said, "Oh, Mother. Let her be. The ATS gets them up early and makes them go to bed late. Best present you can give her is waking up when the mood takes her. However, just then we heard the toilet flush, so the issue was moot. Angela said, "I'll start the breakfast." Mary brought us half a dozen eggs, and I'm going to use them all and make scrambled eggs with mushrooms on toast as a treat. Part 053. It had been decided that with the eggs for breakfast, we could have a Christmas dinner after the King's Christmas message at 3 o'clock and just have two meals, but make the dinner special. I'd brought a few other things, such as some cheese straws, some tea, and a jar with a good portion of my month's butter ration, as well as a carefully wrapped brace of rabbits, boned and skinned by Mabel. The rabbits weren't a surprise. They were going into a mock roast. We spent about 5 minutes discussing what it should be called, since it was going to contain the rabbit, some bacon, a bit of lamb and some sausage meat, plus some crushed filberts. I'd brought them too. In any event, after a leisurely breakfast, well, the tea drinking was leisurely, and we did have extra toast with dripping and Marmite, Angela said, "Jack, take Mary for a walk so Audrey and I can get on with the dinner. Cedric, you're in charge of the spuds and the vegetables, but I'll set you at the dining table so Audrey and I have a clear field of action." Thus Jack and I got ourselves dressed warmly and went out to explore Wells. It wasn't too cold and not raining, at least for the moment. Jack showed me round the town, finishing at the cathedral, where worshippers were now exiting. "Shall we go in?" Jack asked, and I agreed. The double scissor Gothic arch supporting the tower took me by surprise. "It was needed to stop the tower collapsing," Jack said. "It's a very elegant solution." "When was that completed?" I asked. "Fellow named William Joy was responsible. Sometime in the 1300s. 1300s. They look modern." "Yes. Amazing, isn't it?" Part 054. The Christmas dinner was a great success, even as it was unconventional. The men had beer. The ladies drank cider. The pudding, which used carrots and potatoes to provide body, was accompanied by a sauce that had a bit of brandy to give it flavor. Whether by accident or design, and I suspect the latter, I found the silver threepenny piece in my serving. After dessert, we took cups of tea to the fireplace end of the room where a small wreath of decorated holly served the role of Christmas tree. There were presents to open. By letter, it had been agreed that Jack and I would exchange small presents, as would the senior Morrisons and I, though nothing extravagant, but Audrey and I, who would only meet for the first time on this holiday, would not get gifts for each other. This meant less pressure on all concerned. The WI strawberry jam was warmly received by Angela and Cedric. Normally jam was now rationed, so this was a treat. I got a block of dates, which I'd been wondering if I could ask to purchase, so my expressions of gratitude were genuine. Jack very much liked his Swiss Army knife, and Audrey said that if I ever saw another, I was authorized to pay up to 10 bob for it, even if it needed some work. Jack explained how he'd seen the one I had, and how it was useful on many occasions. In return, I got a flannel scarf, a knitted balaclava and gloves. Jack said I'd noted you didn't have a scarf, and only work gloves. The balaclava is a guess, and it's more practical than fashionable, but I can imagine some days when it will be useful if you have to go out to work on the plots at the farm. Indeed, I appreciated what he had given me. Cedric said, "Surely Jack, a girl would like something a bit more fancy than that." "Actually, Mr. Morrison, I'd rather have these than some silk stockings. I like my work on the farm a lot. I'm very happy there. But there are days when the wind bites. I want to be out doing things, but without some protection, that becomes harder." "I can second that," Audrey said. "I'm not sure how much I should say, but we're being trained on searchlights and anti-aircraft guns, and Jerry doesn't just come on fine evenings. We try to put on every layer of clothing we have, and keep our fingers and noses warm so we can do the job. Part 055. We'd had a bad start to 1942, with terrible news from Pearl Harbor, Hong Kong, Singapore, and the Dutch East Indies. On top of this, the war had finally come near to Taunton. Between the 23rd and 27th of April, there was a blitz of Exeter, then Bath. This eventually was allowed into the news, and I was worried about Jack. We were writing to each other at least once a week, often twice. Unfortunately, we only managed to spend a day together at Easter, with Jack taking the earliest train to Taunton and last one back at night. I got a letter May 5th. May 3rd, 1942. Dear Mary. Now that the Bath Blitz has made it into the newspapers, I'd better let you know I'm all right. Had a busy time of it, of course, and won't bore you with details of my work. We'll tell you what I'm allowed to say when we get together again. On that subject, I'll get a week's holiday in early June. Can you get off for a few days and go walking with me in the Mendips? A friend has offered a cottage in Cheddar. Separate rooms, all right and proper. Let me know. Affectionately, Jack. Part 056. Mabel asked Jack all right? Yes. Says the bombing kept him pretty busy. You look concerned, nonetheless. There were just the two of us in the kitchen. The children were at school, and Matilda had gone shopping on Mabel's bicycle. After a pause, I said Jack wants me to take a few days with him in the Mendip Hills. He says separate rooms. His words are all right and proper. Mabel laughed. More fool him. Mabel. Don't tell me you aren't interested in more than conversation. I can tell by the way you talk about him and look at him when I've seen you together. But with the war on, we can't make any plans, build any future. I've still not sorted myself out from Len. True. But perhaps that's more reason to enjoy the time you have. And my hunch is that Len wasn't going to be the man of your life. You're not wrong, but I still can't figure out how I should behave. The main thing is not to let whatever you do lead to disaster. At least avoidable disaster. Meaning? Well, getting in the family way until you can do a proper job of it wouldn't be too cheerful. Peter and I were thinking of another child when the Spanish Civil War started. We've been taking precautions since, and now I doubt we'll try to have another child. It would put a burden on the other two, especially Delia. Does Peter not mind doing without? I asked, hoping that I wasn't being too nosy. We don't do without. We use rubber johnnies. Peter gets them from the barber. He got some before he went to the army, but either forgot or else figured we'd be very, active, because he brought home some more at Christmas. I've an old tobacco tin, I'll put a few in for you, just in case. I just nodded, not really wanting to agree or disagree, though having an option if things got steamy would be sensible. Part 057. Jack and I sent a flurry of letters back and forth as we worked out details. We'd need to make sure we had our rations and to bring along enough food for our time. We decided on 3 nights, and would have the better part of 4 days, as the train to and from Cheddar was fairly straightforward. We met at Cheddar Station late morning on Friday, June 5th. Jack was in the waiting room, reading the Daily Mirror. As I've said, though rare for the time, Jack didn't smoke, for which I was thankful. Never liked being in smoke. I had my rucksack plus my trusty pillowcase, the latter tied with a length of rope and containing a number of food items. Jack had a suitcase and a basket. He gave me a kiss, then said it's not far, about 5 minutes walk. The 5 minutes was really nearer 15, and the cottage was a tiny one. It had only two rooms, a kitchen parlor and bedroom. Jack said, as I said, separate rooms. There was a small sofa in the kitchen. If Jack had to sleep on that, he'd hang off the ends and be very uncomfortable. The floor might be better, but it was tiled. Easy to clean, but cold. I'd acquired some men's slippers and tended to wear them all the time indoors. "Where's the lav?" I asked. "Blue door, just outside." I disappeared. Hadn't had a chance to go for a while. The toilet was at least a flushing type, and there was even a little washbasin. Emphasis on little, and a cold tap. Still, functional. Newspaper sheets on a hook. Toilet paper was getting rare. I came back into the kitchen, and Jack had the kettle on a small camping stove and was setting up a fire in the ancient and rather small range that was there. "There is a boiler in this range, feeding the sink there, so we can have hot water." I arranged that there'd be some firewood, as nobody lives here permanently, so no coal ration. "I won't light this until we come back later, assuming we go out for a walk this afternoon." "Yes, we need to take advantage of the weather," I answered. "But I'm looking forward to some lunch. Mabel and I have started to make rabbit meat paste, or pate de lapin if you want to be fancy. Nice on sandwiches with some of our lettuce or tomato." I hadn't put on tomato today, as it made the sandwiches soggy, but there was lettuce. I handed Jack a pair of triangles and took two myself. "Oh, wow. These are good." Jack practically inhaled the sandwiches. "I'll have to see if I can send you some. It rather needs to be eaten quickly because we're not sure how long it keeps, and we don't want anyone getting food poisoning." Part 058. After we'd eaten, we unpacked quickly, then set out for a walk to Cheddar Gorge and the caves. Actually, we went first to the caves, which took about an hour to tour, then walked further up the gorge. There was a nice bench and we sat for a bit of a rest. "I'm glad you invited me," I said. "I hope you aren't annoyed that the separate rooms is just the two rooms."
No.
I've sort of wondered if we should talk about sharing the bed."
"Oh. I
never expected that." "Jack. I think you know I like you. More than like you. My reservations are from a whole lot of things that aren't about us. Well, of course they're about us, but not about me finding you unattractive or me not wanting you." "Still thinking of Len?" Jack asked. "Not about Len. I've realized I'm not going to make my life with him. But I wouldn't do anything that is or could be in any way construed as cruel, though I'm almost certain he's dead. It would be a relief to know for certain. There's not a lot we can do about it, is there?"
"No.
We're rather stuck with the situation. And because I'm not next of kin and am not in touch with his family, Len is historical, but still a ghost in my past and our lives. Though, truthfully, there's something else that worries me more." I decided to tell Jack about William, but indirectly to get his reaction. Jack said, "What's that?" "Well, the place I was living in 1940 was a semi-detached. There was this couple next door. He worked in a bank and acted like he was the managing director, but I think he was just a clerk. He was in his 30s and had a young wife, about my age, and they'd married when she was about 18. He used to treat her like she was an infant, as if she couldn't do anything. And very controlling. Then once or twice we heard some pretty strange noises and it was clear he was hitting her. But he was a crafty bugger. Made sure he hit her where it wouldn't show. My landlady asked me if I'd heard the noise too, and one day when Mr. Nasty was out we had the girl round for a cup of tea and my landlady put it to her that her husband was beating her. Jack said, I can't abide a man who'd do that. And I also hate it when a man shows disdain for his wife. I'm not talking of being blind to mistakes and things done badly, but you've got to focus on the things that are going wrong, and not say the person is bad because of them. Skills can be improved, and problems can be tackled to try to solve them. But telling someone they're worthless just makes them give up and start to turn in on themselves. Well, X, that's what I'll call him, was a real piece of work. Our neighbor, I won't give her name for reasons I'll explain, told us he'd courted her assiduously. And she was very much like me. Parents died when she was young and she'd been taken in by a woman with several young kiddies. But the foster mother really just wanted a cheap servant and nanny. I think that situation didn't do a lot for how our neighbor regarded herself, because there likely wasn't any love or affection, or even kindness in the foster home. So X was able to fool her and get himself someone he could dominate so he could be treated like a minor god, which was far from what he was. Jack said in the police we hate what we call domestics, fights in private houses between husband and wife. The courts tend to want to leave the law at the door. Very rare that wife beaters get convicted of anything short of murder. That's what Mrs. Well, my landlady told our neighbor, but she had an idea. After one of the big bombings, she'd picked up an envelope in the street with a birth certificate and some other documents for a young woman who'd been killed. In fact, blown to smithereens. Nothing but a few bits of cloth and offal left of the girl. Ghastly case. And nobody ever came forward as family of this girl to whom the documents could be given. So my neighbor and my landlady went to one of the council offices and my landlady said she knew our neighbor. Our neighbor had some bruises from Mr. X that gave some credence to the bomb story, which was embellished to state that our neighbor had ended up losing a lot of her clothing and her identity card.
They gave her a new identity card? Jack asked.
Yes. Then a few weeks later, there was another big raid and some of our neighbor's things were found next to a crater. Perhaps she was killed or injured or simply managed to leave for a new life.
Can't blame her.
We occasionally see women like that tipping over the edge. One of the cases we were taught in training was about a woman who'd been bullied for years. Finally snapped and buried an axe in her husband's head, then went and slept on the sofa. Even left the axe stuck in his head. When the body started to smell, the neighbors complained and the police had to go in.
Lady said he wouldn't stop hitting me.
They didn't hang her, but she's in a mental hospital, though in my view the axe is almost a sign of sanity.
We were quiet for a while.
Then Jack said, "Do I dare ask about sharing the bed?"
Yes.
I said we should talk about that. Actually, I was feeling a lot more confident about Jack given his reaction to my story.
Jack looked fidgety.
I decided to be direct. Jack, I think I should tell you I'm, not a virgin. I've not much experience, and it's supposed to be magical and fantastic, only for me it was simply all right. Didn't do much for me, but not horrible. But I do like you, and the way we get on together, so perhaps it will be better with you.
Actually, you're ahead of me. I've not got beyond some slap and tickle. You know. Petting. And going all the way, there's always the worry of pregnancy. But yesterday I went to the barber and got some rubbers.
Mabel gave me some too.
Jack laughed. She didn't trust us not to get carried away.
I think more that she feels the war means we'll miss out if we don't seize our opportunities. And with the cottage, we don't have to fumble with clothes in places that aren't suitable for enjoying ourselves, or hurry in case we're discovered doing so. I really don't want to get involved with that kind of thing. If we're going to, make love, let's do it in comfort.
Mary, I'd better not tell my colleagues. They won't believe there's a woman around who says things like that.
I suspect there's lots of women who would like to have time and comfort with someone they genuinely feel affection for and find attractive.
Why don't we find something for tea? I think I spotted a fish and chip shop, and then we can curl up together and find out how we get on.
Yes. I'd like that. I'd really like that, I said, and meant it.
Part 059.
We found our fish and chips and took them back to the cottage. Jack had brought some cider, and I'd made a rhubarb tart.
We lit the range so we'd have some hot water for dishes and washing. After we'd finished eating, we were both a little awkward. "I'd like to wash before we go to bed," I said.
"Yes.
Me too. But I'll go outside while you wash," Jack offered. "If you feel more comfortable doing that."
"I thought you would want me to."
"Well, at some point I've got to. I suppose the expression is drop my knickers." We both laughed. Then laughed some more. In fact, had a fit of giggles. Then I made sure the curtain on the window facing the street was closed, and simply took off my slacks and blouse. "Can you unhook my brassiere?" Jack was more than willing to oblige, and was undressing too. I turned on the tap and waited until the water turned warm. It hadn't had time or fuel to get very hot, but I partly filled the modest enamel bowl that was in the large kitchen sink. Nobody used the full sink these days. "Oh, I forgot to get my flannel and towel. They're in my rucksack." Jack went to get these, as well as his. Wrapped in my towel was a small tobacco tin that had a small piece of soap. It had been rationed since February. Apparently, the fats used for soap were also needed for explosives. There was evening summer light coming through thin curtains above the sink. The blackout curtains on that window weren't drawn. There was also light coming through similar thin curtains in the bedroom. Two naked people washed themselves, then moved to the bed. Jack pulled back the covers and we got in together. I noticed that he'd put a small packet on a small table that was beside the bed. With no reason to hurry, we took our time and I found myself experiencing something new and very enjoyable. We were rather clumsy with the rubber sheaths, but with some laughter managed all right. Somehow the two of us were able to talk and cooperate to sort things out, and the silly awkwardness that is sex was just part of what we were going to be happy remembering together. Afterwards, it couldn't have been very late as there was still light. I was lying in Jack's arms and he said simply, "I think your neighbor managed to get away." And he pulled me closer and kissed my forehead, since I was snuggled down against him and that was the only bit available. So he understood. I wouldn't say anything that would require him to lie. What had been said was about a neighbor. So I said nothing, but hugged him. As I did, I noticed that he was getting interested again. Good. I was too.